Okay. Excuse me. At this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify requirements for chairing a meeting at Central Orlando Group Saturday night speakers meeting, our 1 year continuous sobriety. Have Central as your home group and attend a group conscious meeting. I'm Brian. I'm an alcoholic. Sobriety date's April 23rd, 1989. And that's through God's grace, Alcoholics Anonymous, and a sponsor that still tells me the truth today. And it's amazing. I'm up here in front of all of you, and my hands are sweaty, nervous. And you know what? I used to drink over that. And today I don't have to. I can use the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have a great life today because of the action. And, you know, as my sponsor says, I don't care what you think or feel, Brian. I care is the action that you're taking. And I always feel better afterwards. And this is great. A full house, birthday night, celebrating anniversaries. To me, that's the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank you. The group asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off and refrain from moving around or talking while a person is sharing. And to introduce the speaker, well, I believe in Alcoholics Anonymous that God puts people in your lives at certain parts of your life for a reason. And at this time when Sean and I met, life was kicking my ass. And what he did is he did the 12 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous, gave of his time freely, and everything else. And today I am so grateful that he calls me a friend. And he's the man that does the action, and more action, and more action. And because of that, he reaps the benefits of Alcoholics Anonymous. So please, with that, warm welcome for Sean.
I'm Sean, an alcoholic. I was just thinking, if I'd have known you were going to make me do this, I'd have charged you for my time. Again, Brian, thank you. It's always an honor to be asked to speak. Man, there's a lot of people in here. Dang. I was actually talking to my friend, a friend of mine who is not one of us, earlier, and telling him, yeah, I'm telling my story at this meeting. I was like, oh, there's going to be a lot of people. I was like, yeah, there'll be a few. And he goes, are you nervous? I go, no, not really. He's like, well, I'd be really nervous. I go, well, I kind of am now. You keep talking about it. What the heck? You know, but this is what we do. You know, it really doesn't matter if I was nervous or not, or if I would never want to do this. If someone asked me to do something for Alcoholics Anonymous, if I can, I will do it. So that being said, let's get into it. My sobriety date is August 05. I get to tell you a little bit about what it was like before then. I am actually one of these late bloomers. I really thought if I'd have started drinking like at 12 or 13, life would have been better. But I waited till I was like 21, which now is unheard of. But it's trying to obey the laws of the land, I guess. But I grew up in upstate New York. I have an older sister who can't pass the alcoholics test. She has one and then says, I'm feeling it, and stops. I object on principle. That ain't right. When I was feeling it, things were good, you know. And I have a younger brother who also can't pass the test, so I'm an only AA child, I guess. My parents are very loving, tolerant. They were like that my whole life. I am not a victim. Everything that happened in my childhood was what I perceived. They do the right thing. Although saying that, I was talking to a friend of mine earlier, and I came in from Florida last night, and they went to Daytona. So they didn't really want to see me, apparently, till Monday. But they are awesome. I'll get into that a little bit later. But in my whole life, I felt as if I was missing something, like you guys had instructions, and I was too scared to ask what said instructions were, so I lived my life in fear. And then I was a pretty good athlete when I was a kid, and I was very fortunate. I got accepted in the college in North Carolina, I want to say my junior year, and it's funny how I used to skip school, not to party, but to hit golf balls, which is so lame now that I think about it. What? But that's what I did. It's kind of that, you know, once I got into drinking, it was all about drinking, but before that, that's what it was all about. And went to school in North Carolina, didn't know anybody, but being from New York, it is cold there, and I play golf, so you got to go where it's warm. I did go to school for a while. I used to lie and tell people I was a lawyer, even though I went to school long enough to be a lawyer. I am not a lawyer. My sponsor at one time, actually, I could share this. I used to lie and tell people and give legal advice freely. I was thinking, it was either yesterday or earlier today, you know, I was driving. I used to play golf professionally, which sounds really cool, but lawyer sounds prestigious. So I would lie about that and tell you, you know, I watch Law and Order. I can make up words. And so I remember my sponsor telling me, you are not allowed to give legal advice ever, ever again. And I still try, but it doesn't work. But I went to school. I did not finish. I lied about telling people that I would go back to finish to get you off my back. I was very fortunate. My story before AA, I would call it God's will. However, if my parents call it handed to you, you know, everything was handed to me when I was a kid. And when I got out of school, a close family friend was working at this golf course in Pinehurst, in Southern Pines, North Carolina, and he got me a job there. It was very convenient. My best friend from college, my college roommate, he was working at one golf course, I was working at another. We were going to party, have fun. And, you know, the darndest thing happened. He, like, got a girlfriend, got engaged, and, like, grew up. And that is just selfish. That is selfish behavior. Because now I don't have anyone to drink with. It has been my experience that if you drink enough, you're never alone. And I was a barroom drinker. I was not a stay-at-home drinker. That is probably why I got in so quick, because I was working pretty hard, and I was playing golf a little bit on the side and making some money, and I was very fortunate to, I was able to buy a condo right on the golf course in Pinehurst, ironically, I bought it from a preacher. I don't know why I just thought of that, sorry, but I don't go to church, so... But, you know, I was doing well, which when I say that, I mean the outside was awesome. The inside was not so good. You know, it's kind of like I just didn't have enough stuff to be cool. And my drinking, I am one of the ones that alcohol never stopped working for me. You know, I hear that a lot where it's, you know, it took me to depths and all that stuff, and it actually worked exactly the way it was supposed to every time I drank. The problem was, it worked overtime, and I lost the ability to control my drinking, period. It talks about, in a part of the book, where, you know, we can't differentiate from the true and the false. Well, I presume the people that I drank with drank like me. Later to find out that they were like, dude, you take it to a new level. We are so glad you stopped drinking, because we were getting worried. And what happened was I have a criminal record, which is awesome. It's part of the story my family doesn't appreciate. But I got arrested on New Year's Eve, baby. That's the best time, and I only say that because my intentions never met my actions before I came in here. Because I remember telling my boss that I was going to be the manager on duty, that I was going to stay at the golf shop till about midnight, because it was a big resort. We were going to make sure no one got in any trouble, and at about 11 o'clock, you know, stuff was winding down, so I left. And at about 1:45, I ran into this guy who had a weird costume on, because I couldn't quite recognize this cop is what it was, and he pulls me over, and he asked me to get out of the car, you know, and I kind of fell out, and have you been drinking? And why do we always say no? No. I'm like, dude, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, I've been drinking a lot. And, you know, I was terrified because I did not know what was going to happen. So they hauled me off to jail. And I say that to tell you this. When I got my third DUI by the same guy who I remember very, very politely reminding him that he did not want to have to arrest me again and he should let me go. He did not let me go. And then they threw me in the car. You know, I think I knew the protocol by now. And we go to jail. And I remember sitting in the jail cell at first thinking, oh, this is going to suck. This is not good. And there was this guy in there, and he was terrified because it was his first experience in jail. So automatically, my lawyer in me decides to tell him what he is going to need to do to get out of the situation he is in. Neither of us, I think, got out of that situation. But by this time, I had stopped answering the phone. I had left that job to go play golf because that would make sense if you can't. You know, if you can't make your boss happy, you should be your boss, right? So, I will say my boss at the time was a jerk, but, and I mean me. And like a good alcoholic, when I did get my first DUI, I did hire a lawyer, like right away, because that's what we do, right? Thing is, when you hire a lawyer, you should meet your lawyer before you go to court. The guy didn't even know me. Like, he had the judge call to find out where I was, because I didn't meet him. I was too scared. And while I'm introducing myself to him, I mentioned that we may have a few other charges coming up. And he just kind of shakes his head like, well, we'll tackle that. So I stopped answering my phone, and the deal is in my family, if I don't answer the phone for 30 days when my mother calls, you end up in treatment. She came up from Florida, knocked down the door, basically, and she was mad. It was ridiculous. She's like, what is going on with you? And at this time, I really didn't like answering the door because you really never knew who was going to show. You know, I mean, if you break probation, if you have that many DUIs, you've broken probation somewhere. So there may be a guy, and if he's got a gun, you got to do what he says. And I didn't want to do that, so I used to hide out in the library because no one is going to look for me in the library. I didn't even know Southern Pines had a library. But I remember I'm a criminal. I am planning my escape route. It was either Key West, which makes no sense because I can't even swim, or Montana, which. I figured no one was in Montana, so yeah, right. And so she asked me what's going on, and I told her a little bit about the truth. I had said that I got a DUI. I think in my head I said I got a few more. I stopped drinking around her because, you know, you don't want people to think you got a problem. And I'd said, well, I'm thinking, because I'm not going to do any action, I'm thinking about going to treatment. Because we think about it. We don't just go. And she says, okay. And then I mentioned, I need to go to jail for a little bit. And she was not happy, but she took me to jail. She was like, get in the car. You're going now. What? Okay. So while I'm in jail, my mother meets my lawyer. And I get out. And he told her everything. Steve, back me up on this. I thought I had a suit pending on this guy for breaking my client privilege on this one. And he looks me dead in the eye and goes, dude, it is going to be public record soon enough. You need help. And so I call this treatment center. It's Samaritan Colony in Rockingham, North Carolina. To check it out, I call this guy and he tells me, why don't you come down? And you know, I've seen 28 Days in the movie, right? I'm thinking Sandra Bullock. I'm going to bring my baseball mitt, and maybe we'll do some fishing. I don't know. And I got there, and it was none of that. It was bad news there. That was not cool. We're driving down the road, and I walk in and I meet this guy and he goes, you know, welcome to Samaritan Colony. Do you think you're an alcoholic? I'm like, what? This guy obviously doesn't know it. Why would you ask me if I'm an alcoholic if I come to a rehab? Duh. So I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then he asked me if I've been arrested. I'm like, yeah, a lot. And he goes, you got a problem then, bud. And so I, my lawyer had suggested that if I go there, I might be able to knock some time off. And he didn't say get out. He said knock some time off. And in my mind, I'm thinking, wait a minute, there's going to be more time? And speaking of that, I was in this rehab for 2 weeks, and I when I got convicted, I guess the first time there was they had like the judge was there, they had this like probation area there, and there was just the prettiest Southern Belle blonde girl sitting in that probation thing, and I thought that if I could get her, everything's going to be all right. I got her. Not all right. Not all right at all. 2 weeks in a rehab, and I get this new guy who tells me that the pretty blonde, who I thought was so nice, said, you're going to prison for 2 years. So, yeah, that's what I... What? Right? And I said, that's not good. That's not going to be good for me. And, you know, I got that little news at like noon, and I remember going to lunch thinking, oh, crap, they're serious about this stuff. And that was like my moment of clarity. I can't say that immediately I stopped thinking about drinking, because really for 2 weeks all I thought was, if this is, I'll do this and then we can drink again. But I realized that I was in some serious trouble. And I remember that night, I hadn't prayed. I don't really think I ever really prayed. I remember my sponsor asked me what my prayers were like, and I always used to think that if I used to say, God, if you get me out of this, we will have more fun tomorrow. That was my prayer, which is not a good prayer. But I remember that night kneeling down. There was a little church, I guess. It was part of the thing, and I remember going in there and, you know, thinking, all right, God, if I got to go to prison for 2 years, at least everyone will know where I'm at and they can stop worrying about me. And the weirdest thing happened. The next morning, the obsession to drink went away. It was kind of like, oh, man. Was it? And then, you know, after a while, you're like, oh, I haven't thought about drinking. And then it's like, oh, man, I just thought about drinking when I said that. But, you know, it was like I immediately became open-minded. I really still didn't want anything you guys had. There was a... They made those suggestions like, you know, you need to get a sponsor, you need to go to a meeting when you get out. You know, I heard some of that. And there was a group in Southern Pines that used to bring a meeting to this rehab every other Friday. And then there was this guy who would come every Sunday from that same group. And I remember thinking, this guy is so sick. He keeps coming here. I will ask him to be my sponsor, and he won't care what I do. He was doing like this part of the program, so he was not sick at all. And I remember going up to him and saying, hey man, you know, you think you can help me out here with this stuff? And he was so excited. I was freaked out. He was like really into this AA stuff. And you know, I got out of treatment on a Thursday night and went immediately to the it's called the Primary Purpose Group in Southern Pines, North Carolina. If you're ever traveling and get up that way, they meet at 7 o'clock at Methodist Church every Monday and Thursday, and it is probably one of the best meetings. They're all good meetings, but that one's pretty good. I remember walking up, and there was this group of guys hanging out outside the meeting talking. And I walk up, and they gave me the, you know, I said, hi, I'm Sean, I'm new, like anyone who wants to admit to that. We were talking about that last night. Who wants to admit to that? And everyone talks to you. I want to isolate, like, out there. But they said, welcome. We need you here. And my first thought was, this place must be terrible if they need me here. And then later on, they need me here. It will shut down if I leave. So, you know, the ego kind of every now and again. But... you know, they got me into service work. My first meeting, I remember the room was maybe a little bit bigger than this. I walked in and sat right about where, just behind where Jay is. And then I was put right there in the intensive care unit. No offense. It was actually on that side. So.
Right place.
But yeah, and they said, sit, shut up. And then I got up, and I remember, it was probably not that meeting, but I remember, it's funny how I look at it now, I was like, some of the stuff they told me really hurts my feelings now, but back then I was so dumb, I didn't realize it. But I remember my sponsor saying, are you willing to change? And I said, yeah, I don't want to do this the rest of my life. I haven't missed but like a half a dozen days going to a meeting, so I was wrong on that one too. And then another guy had said, I got good news for you, young man. This is a program of action. He goes, you don't look like a thinker, so you'll fit in here. Really? And you know, and then you have the first, what is it, 30 days out of treatment, you're like, well, they don't like me, and my son, you're right, they don't, so don't go over there. And then it's, oh, I'll never drink at my wedding. And then my sponsor's like, no one's going to marry you, dude. You have nothing to offer. And so I was very like put down into place where I belonged. And you know, when I left that first meeting, there was a meeting after the meeting which I wasn't invited to. Whatever. And it was on my four-step. And there was this guy, his name was Will B. I was kind of young, but he looked like he was 100 years old, I swear to God. He'd been sober a long time, and he was going to give me a ride home because I can't drive legally anymore. Ever. They told me never, ever will you ever drive, and ever, ever. Ever is what they said. I drove here, just so you know, legally. Ha! But this guy, Will, he had... He said, come on, I'll bring you home. I live right down the road from where you your house is. And we get in the car, and he said, what are you doing tomorrow? I said, you know, I'm going to be busy, I'm sure. You know, I just got out of jail and treatment, so yeah, I got things to do. Well, unfortunately for me, I paused a little. And then he said, perfect, I'll pick you up at 11. We're going to swing by and go to a noon meeting. After that, we got to swing by this rehab, check out this guy, go to detox. And then we might go and drop off some big books at the jail. What? And I was like, okay, man. And I didn't know if he was going to kill me. He was so old if I said no. So I said, yeah. And, you know, that guy actually passed away a few years ago. I was very fortunate to go up and... His anniversary was in August too, and he used to joke that if I would go to North Carolina in August, he would make sure he'd be there. He passed away. Gosh, it's been 3 years now, but he took me to a meeting every day, and I wanted to go, but he took me every day. He picked me up at 11. We'd go to a noon meeting, and then he'd pick me up at 7. And I'm not a guy who says meeting makers make it. They make a lot of meetings is what they do. But it's what we do in the meeting. It's how we carry the message. My sponsor was very, very clear to me to say that when you go to a meeting, you deliver the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. When you have the mess, you call me and give it to me. And he said it with like a stern voice, so I took him for his word. And we got right into the book. It's amazing how we hide this stuff from everybody on the wall, but he had told me that when I finally had the willingness and the desire to stop drinking, I worked the first three steps, and that's kind of how I sponsor people. I don't believe that relapse is a requirement. I know it happens, but I always tell you I'll be here when you're ready. I do remember old people when I came in saying that we spilled more liquor than you drank. I didn't waste any, so there. and I believe that you have to drink every single drop to get here. Leave no doubt. I sure didn't. And then I did do a fourth and a fifth step in treatment, and then this new sponsor tells me I got to do another one, and I was like, well, give me these sheets, right? These treatment sheets. He goes, dude, you got a big book. It's in there. I'm like, well, that's not fair. I got to read this thing? I love hearing it. Why do I got to do a four-step? The best response I ever heard to this was, it's the one after three. Period. Move on. They told me this was a program of action. They said if I thought my problem was alcohol, I should stop drinking and get out of here. Turns out I had drinking was my solution to all of my problems. What I found here was a power greater than myself that can solve my problem. And it is working. We did a fifth step, and then we read what little there is on 6 and 7 in the big book. I always thought that since they had no idea, they just put two little paragraphs and figure it out. You're an idiot still. Because every time I call my sponsor with a problem, he says, someone's not working 6 and 7 today. I'm like, well, they should have put more in the big book on that. But we get to 8. And I remember hearing people saying they had their A step from their four step. And what happened was my sponsor, I gave him my four step. And be careful if you do this, because what he did was he took it. He didn't even read it, and he ripped it in half and threw it in the garbage. And he said, we'll do 5 now. I was, whoa, I spent a lot of... I got the right notepad to write that stuff down. Because you got to have the right notepad. That's what I've heard nowadays. So I was upset, and I said, well, you can rewrite it again, bud. Step 9 was... They all did not go quite as well as I had planned. I do joke, there was one that told me that if I died tomorrow, it would be too soon. You know, and I always have told people that, but I've never told anyone why, except for like two people. If you don't show up for something that's really, really important that you're supposed to be at, like a wedding, they get mad. Just so we're clear. That's what happened. And I have since made a better amends. I do remember making amends to the Officer Perry. I'm breaking his anonymity. It was more like I was on that little cloud that we get on that... I'm going to, open a treatment center and save everybody. And so I ran down to the police, the Pinehurst, the PD. And I was like, I need to speak to this guy. And, I'm going to say, thanks, man. I'm sorry what I did, but I'm so grateful that you helped me. He didn't even remember me. What is that? Are you kidding me? Like, he had no idea. I'm like, I'm the only criminal in Pinehurst, and you don't remember me, dude? Like, you're making a living off of me. So that didn't go right, neither. You should never make an amends and get a resentment. It's usually the wrong process, I think, right? And I remember one of my, the whole book is awesome, but one of my favorite parts is in step 10 when it talks about, there's promises everywhere in the book. And in step 10, it talks about this relief based on my spiritual maintenance, my spiritual condition, that the thought of a drink will just disappear. And I remember reading that, and that was amazing to me. I grabbed a hold of that like, so wait a minute, slow down here. 10 things? I got to do 10, and I'm going to get this relief. And they're like, yeah, dude, duh. Because, when I see 12, I see like 200. Because there's so much wording there, And it's right here. And that was amazing. And then they told me that, you're going to give your will and life over to this higher power. And now you're going to seek this higher power like you've lost it. Because if I seek this higher power, a buddy of mine tells me that it's like you lost your favorite golf clubs. Now seek it, because you'll never not think about it. And that has kind of been my process. I will say I'm way better at meditating. I think it's because I'm lazy. I don't know. But I can sit and be still, and there's not much going on up here. People who know me know that there's not a whole lot up here. But prayer came really, really tough for me. I don't know why. I was raised in a religion. I won't say which one. It was Catholic. And I used to joke, you know, that same feeling of not knowing what was going on. That's how I felt in church. Thing was, you know, they were speaking a different language, but it wasn't Latin, so I do have that. Because my grandmother used to take me to a Latin mass, and I went because they had really good donuts. I'm not going to lie. But again, I would never ask these questions that I think normal people do when they don't know something. You know, the greatest gift that I got from AA was the ability to ask for help. Because before I came in here, my answer to everything was, it's not that bad. Mm-hmm. Everyone goes to jail every now and again. Actually, no. Normal people don't go to jail, guys. I hate to break this to you. It's kind of weird. They don't even go to visit. I had a friend who says, you know, you got sober. Now you got to stop taking credit for stuff you're supposed to do. You know, there's a reason why they put a date on your bill. Because you're supposed to pay it. Stop congratulating yourself, Sean, is what they tell me. And then we had really been doing 12-step work the whole time, but I didn't get that spiritual awakening that it talks about until I did all of the steps. But I was sober 3 months, and they started letting me go back to that rehab to carry a meeting in there with the guys. And then I was thinking about this today. I actually was on a panel meeting on gratitude. I want to say I was like 4 months sober, and that was kind of cool. I remember sitting at my home group, and I think he's actually coming to the state convention this next week. But I remember him sitting there, and he had this look, and he'd always nod. I'm like, this guy's so weird. Everything he says, he nods to, and I wanted to just go over, like, give me $1,000. I was on that, and I remember hearing there's this lady. Her name was Miss Penny. She had so many years of sobriety, and she'd always say that I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. And when I first came in, I really thought there had to be another way, because I'm not grateful to be here. And, you know, as I stayed, that process has changed, because I tell myself this, and I tell people that I sponsor, that, you know, everything, you know, it tells me in that book that everything that happens, it happens for that reason. You know, there are no mistakes. There are no, I have to accept everything. And one of the things that I learned in working the steps was that I have a part in everything too. I was at a meeting a couple weeks ago, and someone was saying, oh, nothing I say will make you drink. No, that is true. I agree with that, but I can have a part in that too. You know, I need to carry myself in this room as if you've never seen a big book. Or you've never been to a meeting, because what we have here is very precious, and I believe that. I was sober a little while, and that condo that I had bought, I can't drive anymore, ever. And my parents live down here. I got a brother down here in Florida, and they had suggested maybe you move down here. So I decided I was going to sell this condo. I didn't really want to. I actually sold it in like 2 hours. So I guess it was God's will. I moved down here. I started going to meetings at the Primary Purpose group. It's in Kissimmee, the West Side Club. I remember walking in there. I don't know if anyone's ever been. I know a few people who are from there, but you walk in there, and then you walk through, and there's a coffee bar. And I was like, what is that? You guys got a bar in an AA building. And I was like, is that okay? I mean, really? And then, you know, when you move from, you know, your first group to another one, the other one is doing it wrong.
Right.
Yeah, they are. They're not. Eh. But I got a little bit involved in that group. I have been fortunate where I actually last year I moved to Georgia to play golf. My career path that my sponsor used to say that is not a career path. Shame on him. Now I do it for a living. But I moved up there. My aunt, I have an aunt, my mother's sister. I had never met her in my life, and my uncle passed away last year. And my mother, being the way she is, my aunt called her, and she hadn't seen her in 30 years, and called her and said, "I need some help." And my mother was on the next flight. And she stayed with her for 2 months, came back, brought my aunt. I met my aunt, and I was thinking about playing golf again for a living, and she had said, "Well, why don't you go to Georgia and help your aunt?" So that's what I did, because that is what we do. And that's been a kind of a new experience and a very cool experience. You know, I was thinking about earlier, when I was here over the winter, there was a guy who, he's a weird old guy, but he had asked me to sponsor him while he was in town. He's got, I don't know, 30-something years of sobriety, and I remember thinking, why would you want my help? And, you know, he had said that you have something I want. And it brings me back to when my sponsor, he gave me his phone number, and I went to give him mine, and he said, no, you have nothing I want. You call me. So, you know, by doing the next right thing, apparently someone thinks I have something. But, you know, the greatest gifts that I've gotten have come from people in AA. A few years ago, I went through some stuff, and I got kind of involved with some young characters sitting there in the back, and kind of rejuvenated me, because I was getting a little, you know, you go to a meeting and, you know, he's going to say the same thing, and he's going to, and it's like, dude, I know what they're going to say, so I should stop going. And I was going anyway, but I was becoming a bleeding deacon, and I didn't really care for that. And I saw some young people getting sober. And how awesome is that? You know, I've got a guy that I sponsor now in Georgia who's 15 years old. And how bad is your life at 15 that you got to come in here? Bad enough. You know, I was giving him a ride the other day, and we were talking, and you know, one of the things my sponsor told me was that feeling that I had right before I came in of less than, not wanting, you know, wanting that permanent solution to a temporary problem was going to be my greatest asset when I came in here and got sober. Because what I have is, we have this bond where, you know, when I walk in and you can tell something's wrong, I've got some friends who can tell when something's wrong with me, and, you know, I'll never forget a guy, I walked into a meeting and I said, you know, I can't find my higher power today. And he said, "Me neither. They must be together. Let's go get a coffee." You know, that works for me. You know, it really does. You know, I've seen growth in people that I got another friend of mine in Georgia who I was at his first meeting last year, and I remember he read How It Works. Who wants to read How It Works? It is so long. I would rather do this than read How It Works in a meeting. I'll tell you that right now. I remember he read How It Works, and he gets done. You know, and I always joke, and I do kind of joke around a little bit, but if you can tell, he sits down next to me. I goes, "Wow, man, that was really good." You know, because no one wants to do that. He's like, "Yeah, this is my third meeting." And I look at him. I was like, "Man, I'm surprised you can read." And at first, I thought he was going to punch me. And now we're really, really good friends. You know, I've seen him take meetings into detoxes. I've seen his life change. You know, they told me that the same guy will drink again. So I needed to change. And then they said, "Change everything." And then my sponsor threw in, "You have nothing to keep. So go ahead and do it." You know, I love AA. Like I said, I go to meetings all over. I was looking at my phone earlier, and there aren't many, like, what is it, civilians in my phone? A lot of AA people. And, you know, when I can call an AA person who can get me in touch with another AA person if I'm in a certain area and need to find a meeting. Because that's what we do. You know, this program has taught me what it means to be of service. You know, when I was a kid, my father used to put on this huge parade for St. Patrick's Day, and then he at Christmas he would do this thing where his company would bring all this stuff and they'd give it away to the inner city kids and all this stuff, and And I used to go because we were right next to this chocolate chip cookie thing. You can eat a lot of cookies in a whole day. I didn't go for service reasons. But I remember a few years ago asking him, why would you do that? And he looked me down in the eye and said, because it's the right thing to do. Why wouldn't I do that? He did it intuitively. I had to learn that in here. You know, so I think that, I was with a buddy last year, and there was a speaker we were listening to, and he had said kind of at the end that, it's not am I better than the guy next to me. It's am I better than I was, 7 years ago, 6 months ago, yesterday. Because, you never know what you're going to say, whether it's from me tonight or somebody else, that gives you the hope and courage to stay one more day. Because this isn't the easiest thing to do, but it is the best thing to do if you're an alcoholic, at least of my type. And, it's good to see a lot of good-looking people in this room. Business is good. I think I parked in Winter Park tonight, so I'm grateful to be here and was able to share. I will end that, stay. Don't leave before the miracle happens. And if you've gotten that miracle, don't leave 5 minutes after. So thank you for letting me share tonight.